the market craziness of the past many years has made me into a crazy person. And I'm so ready to chill and try something new.
Welcome. I'm very, very happy to be here with Loie Hollowell and to do this podcast, Was macht die Kunst, as a live podcast with this wonderful, exquisite audience. Thank you for being here and thank you, Loie, for agreeing to talk to me today. We are sitting here in this fantastic place. Whenever I'm here, I can't believe what an oasis this is. A 1950s gas station transformed into a gallery and into a magic garden with bamboo and with these huge fish swimming around in ponds. And then again, you have on the other side, the subway, the cars, the traffic, Berlin. But here it's like an enclosed magic place. So I'm super happy to be here and to see your fantastic show here. The show is called Exquisite Corpse and it will run through November. So we will talk about the show, of course. But our podcast is called Was macht die Kunst? What is art up to? And that is my first question for you. What is art up to in your life right now, Loie Hollowell?
Oh my gosh, that's like asking me what is art? Art is like my life. I don't know. I grew up with artists, raised by artists. I don't even know how to answer that. It's just everything. And right now I'm into art about tits.
Tits.
Yeah. Breasts, vaginas, and anything, bellies, pregnancy, anything that helps me understand what I just went through for the past many years. Yeah.
That's really highly original when I think what other artists are using as motifs. This is really very, very personal and exciting.
Well, I mean, 50% of the population is born with, you know, potentially going to have tits and breasts. And then a large portion of those people are going to give birth and possibly breastfeed. And I just think that it's one of the most beautiful things and the most universal things. And so I'm really interested in finding art and talking to artists who explore that experience. Yeah.
It's very relatable too. It's as a mother and as someone who was once lactating, it's very moving to see these experiences translated into art. You called the show that you curated not only with your own work, but also with the works of Veronika Pausova and Sasha Brownick and Kiki Kogelnik. You curated it and you called it Exquisite Corpse. That's a game that we know from the Surrealists where you draw a little thing, a little head or something on a piece of paper, you fold it, the next person draws the body, folds it again, the next person draws the feet, and all of a sudden you have an elephant in high heels or a cowboy with fishtail or something like that. How does this relate to the show?
When Pace Gallery started working with the estate of Kiki Kogelnik, I got very excited. And I had started incorporating hands and feet into my work, especially when my kids were born, because I was putting their hands and feet, tracing them and putting them into the work. And then I saw this. I said, oh my gosh, I can actually maybe get a backstage pass to see this work, you know, up close. And that, you know, that was a while ago. So I've been thinking about ways of putting the body, my body, that of my children, into my work in like an unsentimental way. And it's taken other artists to show me a path to do that. And so that, like the Dadaists, has been like a kind of a sharing of information, kind of like the way that they would also, it was also a written Exquisite Corpse game as well. So it's kind of like a poem. So in a way, I feel like us sharing information about pregnancy is a bit of a Dada verbal Exquisite Corpse game. Like how was how was your mastitis? And then you pass it down. And then, oh, mine, I used cabbages to help my breast. And then you pass it down to the next person. I love the term exquisite corpse also. As a woman, we obviously, there's a visual culture right now that is just like pushing you into a beauty standard that is like completely unattainable, right? And Instagram and social media has made that even worse. But the reality of us in our bodies, or me in my body, is a grotesque feeling. Often, you know, Veronica and I were just talking about this. It feels like, you know, you get in, up and you get up in the morning and you look at yourself in the mirror and you're like, it feels like you kind of have to put yourself together, especially as you get older. I'm feeling it more and more. You know, let's put this on and this in and, you know, pop it up and push it in. And it feels like your body's falling apart and then you're putting it back together. And so Sasha is another friend. Veronica and I are all similar ages. We've not all given birth, but we're all exploring this idea of like being in a female body and how do you break out of it and how are you constrained? And when I see Kiki's work, it kind of helps me feel okay with the grotesque. And I know her work is not grotesque, but she's using some very, her colors are aggressive a little bit. And I'm really obsessed with her color palette, especially the pieces represented in this show.
They are very bright, almost neon colors.
Yeah.
To me, when I look at Kiki Kogelnik's hands, it always also reminds me of cave painting. Like that's the earliest depiction that men made on walls some, I don't know, 40,000 years ago or something, where they kind of probably had some color in their mouth and sprayed it onto their hands. So,
right.
So you had the silhouette of the hand. So it seems something very primal and very, very personal, like a thumbprint when you have to go through customs to get into the U.S. It's your personality, the shape of your hand or your fingers or your skin.
Yeah, I love... there's probably been a show of artists who depict their hands, but Marisol, the Venezuelan artist, is some beautiful hand tracing. Louise Bourgeois's hands. I mean, there's just this, you know, lineage of women depicting their hands and their work that I'm really drawn to.
You grew up in California as the daughter of two artists. Was it always clear to you you also want to be an artist?
Yes. I have pictures of me in my dad's studio with paintbrushes, you know, oil-covered paintbrushes in my mouth at two, walking around and, like, you know, playing with his pastels, which I've learned since getting pregnant. You can't play with those. I mean, they're all toxic. But anyways, I'm in his studio in these pictures when I'm one, two, running around. And I was sharing with you that my mom is a graphic designer and a cartoonist, and she's now a burner. Does anyone know what that is? Burning Man? Yeah. Burning Man is ending right now. It's like a, you know, techno, black light, neon color experience. And so she makes a lot of, like, in her older age, like,
Does it mean she attends Burning Man or she...
No. Burner is a lifestyle. Okay. I mean, people come from all over now that Trump's in office. It's very hard for people to come from all over. But, you know, people come from all over the world to go to Burning Man. No, it's like an alternative way of being. And it's kind of, it's about community and being open to expressing your sexuality or your energy however you want. There's like no restrictions in like a burner culture. Yeah.
And did you grow up in the burner culture?
I mean, my mom and dad are very artsy, so they had a lot of you know, eccentric friends, but they didn't become burners till much later.
Okay.
Yeah. After the kids were grown.
So it was clear you wanted to go to art school when you were little. And what are you, when you think back, what kind of art impressed you as a child? I mean, probably it's difficult when you really surrounded by it from birth on, but I, for example, have some images of museums where certain paintings spoke to me when I was very little. And of course, Frida Kahlo spoke to me when I was very little, when I was a teenager. But sometimes growing up, it feels like certain artists accompany you for a while. Do you know what I mean?
So my dad, you know, is a figurative painter, and he painted my mom naked. She was his muse of sorts, and I really reacted against that as I came into my, you know, feminist self. I was not going to be a painter. So I was really obsessed with Pippa Lahti-Riest and feminist performance artists. And I went to school for performance art and sculpture and not painting.
It's interesting to me, and it's a good feminist development, that you haven't mentioned a single male artist's name. Which I find totally acceptable, but I find it notable too, because normally when we talk about art history or even the 20th century, male figures come to mind too. But I like that you mention.
Yeah, I know. I'm not. I mean, I love men. I'm married to a man who's also an artist, amazing artist. But I'm. Yeah, my influence has been really shaped in reaction to a very dominant man in my life, my dad. And I feel like I love that work that was in his, in, you know, cut out of art books on his walls. We have Girl with the Pearl Earring, Vermeer's, you know, posted everywhere, and Cezanne's everywhere. And
okay, but Pippi Lahti-Riest is a great start. For a young artist.
Anna Mendieta, she was, you know, when I first went to undergrad, I was just wanting to dig myself into holes. And I did a performance piece where I covered myself in pomegranate juice and moaned naked on a pedestal in the middle of campus. So I was just trying to, you know, channel these historic feminists.
So you attended art school in California and Virginia. You live in New York.
Yeah.
How do you get to work? And how does, what does your studio look like?
So I moved to Ridgewood, which is a beautiful neighborhood in Queens. So I've been there for a while. And somehow we managed to buy a house in this neighborhood. And a few years later, we figured out how to buy a studio. And they're a mile apart. So I walk or bike, and it takes about 5 minutes.
So is it a studio in a big building, or is it a, how can we imagine your studio?
Ridgewood is so it's a neighborhood that was settled by the Germans, and it's all made with yellow German brick, this specific kind of German brick, and they're all barrel-fronted buildings. Two stories, and some are three stories, and they all are very uniform. It feels like a European city, almost, but a little European. It's full of parents and kids and artists now, because it's the cheaper neighborhood. It's getting more expensive, but it's been the cheaper neighborhood. My studio is in a brick building with commercial below and residential above.
And is it just house. For you, or do you share it with...
I share it with my husband. Okay. Yeah, he has one side and I have one side. I've never been asked this question.
What your studio looks
no.
like?
No. Or how I've gotten to my studio.
I like to think, how does this day start? And how, you know, what air do you breathe? What do you see on your way to work? And
I like
it just,
that.
It makes... Yeah. Some people work right next to their bedroom,
yeah,
and they don't even have to leave the house. And some people have to take the subway for 45 minutes.
So everyone in Ridgewood has an e-bike, okay, and they pile their kids on the back. and they bike to school. So my husband does that at 7:30, and I get up at a leisurely 8 p.m. and am out of the house by 9, and somehow manage to not start working in my studio until 10:30 or 11. I don't know what happens to that. I don't know. I just disappears.
And what does the work then look like? I can imagine that some is, of course, administration, but then when you make art, how does that process start?
I recently did a transition. I think with the market changing, it's made me realize that I also want to change. I don't want to keep pumping out paintings. It's been exhausting. And so I just let go of my studio assistants. I had two people helping me. My husband was helping me with the sculpture aspect of my work. And then he trained a person to do that work, but he would oversee it. And then I had a person helping me painting. He would do underpaintings. And as of 4 months ago, I'm solo. It's been amazing and terrifying because I work super slow now. But it's the market craziness of the past many years has made me into a crazy person. And I'm so ready to chill and try something new and just not care anymore. You know, I want to put tits in my work or just make drawings for a year and not worry if they sell. That's my goal.
That sounds beautiful. And it sounds fruitful.
I feel like we're in a good place. Like, we have a house. I've had my kids. They're getting a little older. I tried to have a third. It's not happening. The body says nope. So I'm like, this is the time.
But it's
sounds. Does this happen? Like when your kids are?
Oh my!
How old are your kids?
Well, the youngest is about to move out, so it's horrible, horrible prospect of letting them all go. But I'm glad they also come back in between. So
how do you assure that your kids come back?
I just try to be super funny, nice, warm. I have a full fridge at all times.
So none of them are going abroad to study.
Yes, they are.
But what happens if they love it and they don't come home? What are you going to do?
Can you please stop talking about this?
Because I'm thinking about this and my kids are 6 and 8 and I'm already like, I have to convince them that New York is the best place in the world. They can never leave.
Well, I think it helps that we live in an interesting and big city.
Yes.
That may offer some job prospects at some point in
yes.
time for them. And
right.
I would love to have them near me when they settle for good. And definitely, I mean, it's on my mind a lot and it's a little bit scary. But we're going to travel and, you know, we are going out more and maybe go to this movie theater more and to the theater and maybe opera. And we would, you know.
See, this is exciting. Having a new love life with your partner. What is that like to have sex without a kid in your house? What?
You mean in the middle of the day?
Yeah.
Well, back to art. So
this is what I want to see art about. Women whose kids have left home and are having sex again. Like lots of sex.
So you're in the studio, you had a walk, or maybe you took the e-bike. And how do you start working at 10:30 then? What do you do? Do you draw? Do you have some drawings prepared? Are you working on various paintings at the same time? Do you have, one is already dry and you can apply the next layer? Or how does this work?
Just like that.
Okay.
Drawings, paintings. A few paintings going.
Yeah.
And I go between it. And if there's a show, like there's always been some show, then I feel like I actually have in my calendar, you know, work on Yellow Breast number one this day, then work on Belly Cast this day. But in the future, there's going to be nothing in my calendar. I'm just going to go in and do what you just said and just move without a plan.
Mm-hmm. It sounds very liberated. What I wanted to mention before is the very interesting mix of techniques and materials that you use, some kind of foam and then also painting on linen and panel, acrylic and oil. And I find that you, of course, painting on linen has been done for whatever, 500, 600 years. And then you use this kind of foam and these materials that are very 21st century chemicals. So it's as if you are encompassing the entire history of art with your materials in one work. Have you ever thought about that?
The sculptural elements have been brought to me via my husband, who's like a materials genius. And he's figured out how to put these materials together in such a way that it, for the most part, hasn't cracked. Or I'm the one that makes the cracking with my painting mistakes. But the sculptural element of the painting has had very little problem being incorporated in the way that he's figured out into the panel. So there's a few different techniques in this show of my work. There's the larger piece upstairs is, yes, a piece of foam. It's not like a spray foam. It's like insulation foam, like the blue foam you would see paneling on the outside of a house, but not that. It's for sign carvers. It's like a very high density foam. It has no openings. And so we make a file in Rhino, a rendering program, and then we have that CNC milled, and then that gets sanded down by hand, glued on with an epoxy resin, covered with gel medium, this acrylic medium that is kind of binds everything together, and then I start painting on that. There's also a newer technique I've been experimenting with cast breasts of my friends. And that's aqua resin, which is basically like a higher quality plaster. You know, when you're in the studio, the directness, specifically when I draw, it's the most kind of primal feeling to be able to draw, especially with a pigment like a pastel, because it's so direct, you know? Drawing and painting are just so direct.
So you have a lot of biology in your work, a female biology, lactation process, giving birth. There's a whole series of works, dilated 10 centimeters. I find that very almost funny and very interesting. Do you learn about biology through your work?
Through my body. And I don't know anything about biology. I just know about my body. And that's what I put in the work. And I really try to make it. I don't try to make it. It just is from me. So I'm not trying to talk about anyone else's experience, just my own. So like 10 centimeters dilated. I wanted to make those paintings. They're cast third trimester pregnant bellies that have been put onto the surface of the painting. And I made this kind of abstract, colorful bands coming out of it. And I was trying to get in touch with the experiences of the different stages of my labor. That's what the colors around the belly symbolize. And I wanted to use my belly, but I lost my belly button when I was in my third trimester. It just went too big and it was just like flat. And so a good friend of mine had a great belly button, and she was pregnant around the same time. So I used her belly. So in that way, I am bringing someone else physically into the work. And I have talked with everyone, for example, like this breast clock here, this orange one. There's, I think, maybe 4 or 6 people represented. I've kind of lost track of whose breasts are whose, but I get consent from everyone. And I say, can I put you in this painting? And everyone says, sure, you know, and most people are like, you don't have to say my name. Just, you know, use the cast. And I felt self-conscious about that at the beginning, but I think I've come to know their nipples so well that I almost, they've become like a formal topographical space.
It's a very surprising thing to look at and very gripping.
Thank you. I think that I'm interested in it disappearing and reappearing, you know? I've been trying to abstract the nipple to such a degree that it disappears, and I've realized that it can never go away. You know, like the presence of a sculptural element in a painting can never go away. And I love kind of wrestling with that as a 2D image maker, with the combative nature of a nipple, a physical nipple.
So the body parts, to go back to this concept that four artists are showing work together, you, Veronica, and Sasha, and Kiki Kogelnik. You all, these three young artists, all have a relation to the work of Kiki Kogelnik, who was born in Graz in 1935 and unfortunately died not very old in the 1990s. How did you discover that you all liked her work, or that you felt influenced by Kiki Kogelnik's work?
I have wanted to do a show with Veronica for a while, and I've wanted to do a show with Kiki, and I was given the opportunity via Laura in Pace Berlin to do a curated show. So I texted Veronica and asked her if she knew of Kiki Kogelnik. And lo and behold, she'd had the same gallery as Kiki, as Kiki's foundation was worked with Simone Sabal. And anyways, yes, she was very much influenced by it. Another friend of mine, Sasha Browning, I thought had to be influenced by her, looking at the cutouts that she's done in her work. And yes, she was very influenced by her as well. But we'd never talked about that direct connection before. So we kind of just started a text dialogue over the months of how we'd been influenced, when we'd found Kiki's work, what was interesting about it. And thankfully, the foundation was willing to do this very experimental project. And it was really a group effort. I mean, Stephen from the foundation just kept giving us new and interesting things that I'd never seen before from the foundation's archives. And it just pushed the show even further and even deeper. And I just feel so honored to be able to do this. And I'm not a curator. You know, this is like an artist making a show with other artists. And I felt like Kiki was there somehow. I don't know. I don't know what she would think, but she was in my studio when I was making the show.
She was in your studio?
In my brain.
In my brain. And you used your children's hands, the silhouettes of their hands.
Those were a direct kind of jump from the Kiki painting that's on the first floor.
Reaching out with hands. It's beautiful.
Yeah, one of those is my daughter's and one is my son's. And then my profile is the kind of center of the radar.
How do you describe the political climate for artists in the U.S. right now? For you.
For artists?
Yes.
Oh, I think it's a great time to be an artist in the U.S. I think it's amazing.
How so?
Because no one's going to get paid for anything, because there's no financially. So you can do whatever you want. There's no money kind of forcing you. I mean, maybe there's money. I don't know where the money is. I don't know. And also, everyone's so angry. There's so much passion. There's so much anger and sadness. So much. There's ICE agents outside of our schools. Yeah, it's crazy. They're everywhere. So everyone's angry and sad, and everyone knows someone who's been deported. And I mean, that's not even going into like the, you know, reproductive rights side of things. I mean, New York is a little bit of an enclave of kind of safety, but not from ICE. And not from, you know, the visual feed of war images that are coming in. I mean, it's just like, yeah. I mean, that's everyone's experiencing the war, I think. But to be like the, you know, to help perpetrate this war. It's very depressing. But it's like there's so much passion to make art.
So you need freedom to make art. The freedom is still there to, or is there any?
Who's going to take our freedom? I don't know. But I'm a white American. I have freedom. So I'm not the right person to ask. Do you mean like freedom to make what you want in your studio or the freedom to show it? Because that's different. There's always been restrictions on what we can show, but my breasts have been censored. I mean, that's always been the titty paintings. And that's a, you know.
Yes. I think there's different ways of censorship. Mm-hmm. For example, I think tits don't necessarily have to be censored in China. Other things are censored in China, but the US is famous for censoring sexual stuff.
So much. But that makes me want to make it more. Europe, I feel like I could show that that's where my breasts can roam free. But in the US, no. I mean, there's just, I feel it is hard for me to make this work here. When the work has been shown in Europe, it feels like it's always in great dialogue and great conversation.
If time travel were real, what time and place would you visit?
But how do you know you're going to get back? Time travel is a very tricky thing. At this point, scientifically impossible.
What's your most important tool?
Oh, pastel. Soft pastel.
If you were an animal, what would it be?
I'd be a mixture of a lynx and a fox for looks.
What game do you like to play?
Does anyone know Set? Okay, it's the best card game. You have to get it.
What's your favorite color?
Like a dark, rich green.
Do you have a recurring dream?
I have a recurring dream where I have goo on the top of my mouth. And I have to scrape it off. Yes. I had it last night.
What topic would you like to see in an entire issue of Weltkunst?
Breasts, vaginas, pregnancy, some buttholes. I'm sorry.
Done. This podcast is sponsored by Volkswagen Group Culture, who are also supporting Berlin's Neue Nationalgalerie with their Art for All program, bringing a great program of live performances and music to Neue Nationalgalerie every first Thursdays a month. Hope to see you there.